Der Resolve-Podcast. 10 spannende Minuten, 8 Fragen und ein Gast. Dein Einblick in den Schweizer Immobilien- und Finanzierungsmarkt. Kompakt, fundiert und auf den Punkt.
Michael, welcome to the Resolve-Podcast. It's great to have you here with us. Very happy to have you here. We actually wanted to have you here already a long time, so glad you could make it. Maybe for our audience, why don't you first tell us whom you are and actually what do you do?
All right. So my name is Michael Rogenmoser. Originally Swiss, grew up at the eastern border of Switzerland, close to Austria. After my studies, I went into investment banking 8 years, 4 years consultancy afterwards. And then finally, since then, in the fintech industry, which is now, I think, 13, 14 years. And since 1.5 years, acting as CEO of Yahtzee, or SIFI, as it's known in the Romandie.
So you are actually the leader of valuation. You define the valuation. Is that right? For real estate?
Yeah, I wouldn't say we define the valuation, but I think Yahtzee was founded 30 years ago. Actually, we celebrated anniversary in December last year. And Yahtzee invented basically the hedonic valuation method in the Swiss market. The good old days, all the evaluators went for whenever the bank had to go for a mortgage, they sent an evaluator on site, costed the fortune. And now I think the big chunk, 95%+ of all transactions in mortgage markets Switzerland go without any physical evaluation. So it's just done by the model. And I wasn't part of it, but I'm very, very proud of what
actually... But you're part of it now.
I'm part of it now, but I'm very proud of what actually they achieved.
And so maybe for our audience with a lot of professionals in the real estate space, can you maybe explain us a little bit how concretely does the valuations with Yahtzee actually work? What's the methodology in a few sentences?
In a few sentences, I mean, there is a lot of valuation methods. We at least have 12 different models. I don't want to go into details. But basically what you take a few factors, anything from 3 to 20. The more you take, the better it gets. So number of rooms, the flat area, et cetera, you enter it in the system. And then the model basically calibrates and calculates a value or value range out of these for a flat, for a house, for an investment property, whatever.
Right. And so is it actually based on existing transactions in the space, or how do you actually value a property?
I think we are the only one in the Swiss market where the model is actually 100% calibrated based on transactions done by the finance institutions.
So you get your data basically from the lenders?
Yes. So the data, actually the actual transaction that happened in the market where banks are financing, the banks are submitting this data to us. And there is a lot of AI and in our models included, which then learns and then adapts and then calibrates the model to make it to the latest standards. This is just the hedonic valuations. But we're also doing the very classic DCF valuations for
cash flow analysis.
Yes, for the very complex objects where at some stage, the hedonic valuations of a very, even if you have a villa with 40 million in St. Moritz, usually there is not that many transactions where the model can be calibrated. So for these special objects or, 100 million investment properties or like Europa Allee here in Zurich main station. So you cannot value with a hedonic model. Yeah.
And so what's the time lag between getting that data and calibrating model? Because I think that's one of the critics we hear very often is that, okay, you have data, but it's kind of old data. Can you give us a bit of a sense on the timing or the time lag?
Yeah, usually it depends how quickly the banks are delivering to us, and most of them delivering on a quarterly basis. We are updating our models on a quarterly basis. So that means there is a time lag, right? But it's not half a year or a year, but it's usually a quarter or a few months.
And so maybe moving on, since you have data from everybody, tell us a little bit, what do you see as kind of big trends in the Swiss real estate market today?
I think, you have to differentiate a bit, right? We have been talking now about valuation models from the hedonic side, which is primarily used for all the mortgage providers in the Swiss area. On the other side, you have the institutional investors who basically invest in the asset class direct real estate. So all the big investment funds, all UBS fund management, Swiss Life Asset
Management, pension funds, insurance companies,
everything. Yeah. And they don't, it's not about the mortgage, it's about their direct real estate, right? And in that area, so it's more the investment property side. I think last year there was a kind of the year before, a bit of slowdown also due to these interest rate increases. And now after, I think in 2024, there were alone 4 decreases again on the interest rate. And another one just very recently announced by the Swiss National Bank. So this actually drives back the asset class real estate further up in the agenda of the investors. I mean, you can basically say on an investment property, there is a net cash flow return of 3%. So basically like a dividend. And there is a value increase or decrease, appreciation, depending on how it's developing, right? But basically what it means is if the interest rates are at 3%, even if you need to take some money, right? So if you have some debt, you pay 3% and you earn 3%. And there is no appreciation of the, then actually it's not so interesting to be into that business. And also if you go have a bond yielding 3% and real estate, Switzerland yielding 3%, so it's not that attractive. But if the interest goes down, as we have now experienced,
it becomes interesting again.
It becomes interesting again. So basically it's skyrocketing again. There is basically the whole market is doing capital increases. So it's flooded with new money that needs to be invested, which also basically means that there is no more land rarely any more land to actually do a huge project. If there is, it takes basically a century to get the approval by the authorities. If you want to develop an existing property, the same, you have all the parties left and right to say, better not, let's go to court. So the construction activity, it's very hard actually to get the approval and do it. So there is a huge demand from the money. Also, there is on average roughly 80,000 new people coming into Switzerland.
And this you have to find them a place to sleep.
They need a place to sleep. And if they don't buy, they're going to go for rent. And usually they will go for a rent with one of the buildings that for the players, for institutional investors.
So you're telling us investment property is back.
Yes.
Capital increase from, we've seen it, from many big investors was ongoing last year, big time. And now it's time to deploy the capital. So they're coming back. Reason probably why the price levels are actually not really moving for some of the big investment properties transactions.
I mean, what we have seen again, I mean, last year, and we just recently issued our latest numbers from the Swiss property benchmark. This is not the bank finance transaction. This is really the data coming from the institutional investors, where we have seen, for example, last year that the area of residential, normal living for the rental, with the rental income, etc., this market has properly recovered. There was also appreciation, a positive development of the values on top of the yield, the 3% yield. On the office space and more the commercial area, there was still, it was more or less a flat, while the year before it was even negative value development.
So there it hasn't really recovered
yet. It hasn't really recovered. And I mean, you know, these days, I've heard other people saying that the commercial is much better or profitable going forward. But to be honest, the yield is similar to the residential area. It's also around 3%. But with the home office policies, you know, the new people that they don't like to come after COVID, they're not that motivated always to come back to the office. As soon as some of these contracts expire, you know, if I'm an entrepreneur, I would say, okay, if no one is in the office, I only need 50% of the space. What I will do after expiration of my contract.
You go to Starbucks.
Maybe I will just, first of all, I start reducing my space. I try to sublease or just, make sure I take one floor less, which means that there will be more pressure. Also, vacancy rate today, I think in the office area is around 6% across whole Switzerland, 6%, which is still okay, but compared to the residential where it's close to zero, right?
Yeah.
this is still substantial, and it depends. 6% is the average. That means in some areas it can be 8-9%, right? So it is hard to actually see, right? So there is pressure on the office area. Still, I believe if you have a good product, also this market will recover. And I think the most critical thing, or the risk actually we have for the Swiss real estate market, is actually politics. Why politics? I mean, on the one side, we have a lot of initiatives going on coming from the left. It's like they would like to, you know, it's like the Geneva, Basel or Berlin model. You know, if you cannot just increase the rent with the existing, if you do renovation.
Rent control, basically.
It's a rent control, yes. On the one side, there is the right of first refusal or preemption right. So the state can actually buy. And you know how that goes.
Yeah, we've seen this. We've seen this at many cantons in Romani. Very aggressive.
Yeah, and they're now discussing it in a lot of major cantons in the Swiss German area as well, including Zurich. There is this huge initiative on Wohnschutzinitiative in Zurich, which will be decided upon in the next 12 to 18 months. If that comes, it will have a very substantial impact. I mean, roughly, I think 25% of the BIP is from the canton of Zurich. There's a lot of real estate, also from people, investors from the Romandy in Zurich. Almost everyone is invested here, so it will affect everyone. And yeah, I think this is one side. And on the other side, you can imagine there is a lot of pressure of how can we actually limit the immigration. You know, this is then more from the farther right-hand side of the political sphere. Can we reduce the immigration? And there is initiatives there. And what it actually means, if you stop doing immigration, we will not have these 50, 80, 100,000 new inhabitants coming who ask for more. Even worse, and you know, there is not a lot of reproduction in Switzerland, in Swiss families. So there is two going for retirement. There is one young coming to actually go for work. First of all, we need the workforce. And even worse, so if that's not happening, Switzerland would be declining. And declining means, okay, here is a city of Winterthur gone in a year, or a city of Neuchâtel. And that, if that happens, I think that will be very destructive. And this is also driven today. I think Switzerland, relative to the rest of Europe, is like a stellar. It's great. People want to come here. It's a great style of living. There is security. There is no Trump politics where it is at all left and right. So it's stable. You earn good taxes.
It's a nice level. Which obviously impacts the real estate market.
And they come, you know, the point is, if the relative attractiveness of Switzerland remains as is today, which is more attractive than Europe, they actually come into Switzerland. If politics limit that or whatever, we decide to change our politics to actually make sure we're getting less attractive, this will have a massive impact. And the last thing is maybe the geopolitical situation we today have. Everything can happen, which means if there is, you know, with all the tolls, I mean, if inflation increases, maybe we are again up, it's not going down to negative interest, maybe it goes up to 2-3% interest, which again will have an impact on the real estate market. Yeah.
So you talk a lot about investment properties. What about residential? Because, you know, we have a lot of people that simply just want to buy their house. Should they still do that? Or what does your crystal ball or your crystal AI say?
I mean, everyone should buy a house or a flat if she or he can afford it. I can talk for myself.
But is it the right timing? That's the question.
I mean, buying a real estate is for a purpose of living there and not for making money. So not a buy to let. I think the main driver is not the money. If you can afford it, you would buy it because you would like to own something. I think this is still the Swiss style, I would say.
Okay, but that's your opinion. But can I access the Michael, the data computer? What does your computer say? Are the prices going to stay the way they are? Are going to explode? What's your do you have any perspective on the residential market? What do you think is going to happen?
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty much the same. I mean, with low interest, if the mortgage rates are affordable, then there is more demand. We have seen it in the last time. So interest rate also drives the interest of the people. If they need to, you know, for what is clear, I mean, this is just a question of if you have enough income, whether you have the equity and whether you can get enough debt and you can finance it. That's number one. Number two, with all the fundamental factors, the land is limited. There is more people coming into Switzerland than leaving Switzerland. There is more demand for living space. This is not only for the rental area, it's also for buying objects. With that, this demand actually drives up prices.
So it's the same trend.
It's the same trend. For me, it's the same trend. It very much depends where you live, clearly, right? And there is areas which are more attractive and attract more people to come. Usually the guys from outside Switzerland, they come to the more city areas, be it Geneva, Lausanne, Zurich, Basel, Bern, whatever. They usually don't go to a very rural area. But what happens is then the second order effect, the guys who cannot afford it in the city center that have been living here for some time, they move out, right? This is usually what happens and will continue. And even see the third tier effect now, the people who actually went into some area in Aargau. Now it's also Aargau is coming more expensive, yeah. And they even move further away. And the same in the Romandie, they're going to Bülle and areas where, you know, 5-10 years there was not a huge demand. And this is just effect of, this is, it's affordability. And if they want to buy a house, they will try to do. And I can, as I said, I can tell from my own experience. I personally live in the city of Zug. I've been looking for 12 years to buy something. 2 years ago, I stopped because the average prices are still exploding. And, I'm happy to be there for rent.
So you mentioned a little bit about the geographical differences between city or big city and, let's say, more rural areas, etc. You know, what we like in this podcast, and at some point we wanted to call the podcast Röschigraben because we thought, you know, we're trying to connect, you know, a little bit the Swiss-wide real estate community. Do you see big and maybe to some extent funny trends or differences in the data, you know, between you know, Romandie and Swiss German part or even Tessin?
Yeah, I think the Ticino is a bit a special area because they learned it the hard way. It's very nice place. I love it personally. But, you know, there you see what happens to the frontalieri. If the Italians, they're also not stupid. They just changed the regime to make it less attractive to be there, right? So what happens, this is the area where prices actually are declining because there is not that level of demand as we see in many other areas. It's the same if you go to Jura. You know what actually the value of real estate is? It's the land on the one side, and it's basically the building or the stone or the beton, right? And usually the building or your bathroom is not getting nicer after a year or two or 20. They're basically depreciating every year. They're losing value. The only thing which can increase value is the land. And the land value is basically driven by the demand, which I explained before. If there is more people coming and looking for places there, also an apartment or a 20, 30, 50-year-old house will actually increase in value, but that's driven by the land. So if you don't do anything, it actually depreciates. And if you would do a 10 million investment here in Zurich, I guess you would pay at least 5 million for the land and 5 million for the stone or the beton and the building. If you would go to Jura, Oberzon, it's a nice place there, but basically the land is almost for free and you would still pay 5 million for the building, right? Now, the problem is if you would like to keep the value, imagine how percentage-wise how much the land would have to be appreciated versus Zurich, because in order just to keep the total value invested, and that's the problem why actually it doesn't work. Also, that's why I would say the guys looking for performance or the institution investor, they don't go to Jura because they know they actually have no chance to have a real price appreciation there.
So it's a nice clandle for our team in Delemont. Frédéric and Cédric, I hope you're listening. So you talk a little bit about the, let's say, the région frontalière. What about mountain, activity, because what we hear many times is that with COVID, everybody left towns, everybody mm-hmm. went to the mountains, and the prices in the mountain exploded. Is this still the case? What do you see there as a trend between, let's say, mountain or mountain style regions and kind of more plain or more kind of more closer to the city side?
I think obviously that's also one of the areas. It's not just the cities. If you look at some of the foreigners, they also actually come and buy something in the nice mountains or in the, let's say, the classic second home areas.
If they can.
But that's basically one of the areas where actually the prices has even exploded more than some of the city areas. It's again, question of demand, and COVID definitely had a huge impact there. And it's usually where there is, it's like the famous places. If you go to Zermatt or Gstaad or St. Moritz, there usually the prices have increased the most because there is a huge demand. If you go from Zermatt
and
down...
And it doesn't stop, huh? It doesn't stop.
It doesn't stop. And if you go down, because again, the land is limited. So if you want to buy something, then the only thing is you pay more. And what you also see, if you now go from Zermatt down to Tesch, you know, in front of, before you take the train, or further down to Stalden or whatever, the further you go away from the hotspot, yeah, it actually gets cheaper. And that's so it's also, again, it's like if you're in the city, you pay more than if you're in the rural area, or if it's a 15 minutes commute or 30.
But what about, because you talk a lot about it, attractiveness of the land, et cetera, which I understand. What about the number of transactions? Because my impression is that was a bit the challenge during the let's say the last 18, 24 months. There were just much less deals. Is that the case? Did you actually observe a difference in more recently? What's your take on that?
I think during COVID, there was a huge increase of transactions. I think this was a one-time effect. It has stabilized. And then after that, the interest rate quite massively increased a few times.
For Switzerland, yes.
Still moderate compared to the outside, but in Switzerland, it relatively exploded, which didn't stop completely, but the demand was actually massively decreased. Because again, if you need to afford another 5 million nice villa in Zermatt, and you're already paying a lot of debt, the question is, can you afford it? So there was a lot less transaction, but it was not that bad that people usually had to sell. So there was, otherwise we would have seen prices decreasing massively. So there was hardly any fire sale, right?
And what was the reason for... Just that people didn't need to sell, so they didn't sell.
If you have a lot of money, then you have a very excessive lifestyle. If you start earning a bit less, you try, okay, or then maybe only 3 or 4 times a week I go out for dinner, and I just, you know, you try to, in Germany we would say, den Gürtel enger schnallen. So that means you start, you don't take the 7, maybe it's a 6. If your kids, they don't go out with 16, they stay until 20 at home because it's cheaper, right? Yeah. So you start and you don't need to finance for them when they go out. So it at some stage, right, it comes to the level where you really have a problem, which then you will start, and maybe the real estate piece is not the first where you start to save money.
But what you're saying is that we never really reached the point where people really had to sell.
Yeah, there's always in certain individuals, but not the problem is when you have a massive amount of objects coming to the market. That will actually make the next bubble. It's like if we would have minus 80,000 net inflow or outflow in this case of emigration, right? If you would have 80,000...
This might stimulate. Yeah, okay.
This, and then you will see, okay, there's a lot of empty objects, right? And that might stimulate.
But we're quite far from that today.
We are quite far, as I said, for the moment, but politics can change. And just one thing, a political risk, just taking the example of Lex Koller. You know, there is some ideas to actually also impose that on the institutional investors. So imagine all the investment funds, right, with foreign investors investing in the funds, because that would be the same effect. This is like, you're not allowed as a foreign investor to invest into the Swiss investment fund again, because then it's foreignly owned, right? If something like that comes, it will have a massive impact because the demand will decrease. You know, it's again, this is these political developments which can actually drive a next bubble or a next really negative period of real estate prices.
Very fascinating, Michael. We could talk about this for absolute hours. Maybe just to wrap it up, few personal questions on you. First of all, so you, I think the first one you already answered, are you owner or tenant? You're tenant. That's what you said.
I'm tenant, but actually we own a small vacation flat in Ticino. Not for price development reasons, because I'm not sure we're going to make a huge profit.
So you lost money there.
No. I think we bought it, whatever, more than 10 years ago. So there was a small COVID effect also in Ticino.
Okay.
But never comparable to any other region.
Are you fixed or Saron?
Actually, I'm fixed, but short term. So I think I'm okay with taking risks. But my rates, I'm still with, 0.36 or 37% interest rate with a three years period fix. So that was obviously much cheaper than any Saron at the time. And I was financing like this for many, many years. So it will increase because
it's going to be interesting to see your refinancing.
We will be refinancing, but we'll see. So we'll see how it goes. So I have a half a year or more to think, and we'll see whether there is any price development or interest development.
I know some good people who can advise you if needed. Life insurance? Do you have any life insurance?
No.
Why not?
For me, life insurance is good if you really, really need security, I think, personally. We can afford some risk, I still believe. I'm lucky, right, I would say. And I think in any case, there is some death coverage in pension funds. So there is kind of a bit, but I didn't think I need any extra life insurance policy.
You know, it's interesting. We ask these questions because it's about 50-50. You know, some say, well, yeah, my family, of course, I need to have something. And some others say, why? it's a bit interesting. Where do you invest your money?
Well, I would say I'm a very classic investor. So when I was young, I was experimenting quite a bit with options, but I stopped that because I don't have time. So I'm invested in a very diversified portfolio.
So stocks?
Stocks. I mean, there is, as usual, there's some bonds, some real estate, but then it's more funds. So I'm not the ultra high net worth individual with private equity and all asset classes. So I'm very classic.
Not yet.
Very classic.
And last question. Any guest you would recommend us for our next episode?
Yeah, difficult to say. I didn't think about it. You're looking for guys from the industry, right?
We're looking for anybody interesting.
Okay. Let me take that one with me. So I really, I know that you have so many.
I found a question that you cannot answer. So I think we can finish on this note. It's pretty rare. Michael, thanks for joining us for this conversation. I'm sure there's tons of other topic I want to discuss with you about technology, acquisition cost, about also people, talent, because that's another big topic. You know, also talking, you know, about the Röstigram topic that gives very interesting dynamic. But already, thanks a lot for taking the time with us. Also to our audience, thanks a lot for being with us on our Resolve podcast. Don't forget to subscribe, resolve.ch, Spotify, Apple Music, or your favorite podcast platform. Mike, thanks a lot again for being with us, and have a great rest of the week.
Thank you very much. Cheers.
Das war der Resolve Podcast. Kompakt, fundiert und auf den Punkt. Abonniert uns, um keine Folge zu verpassen, und teilt den Podcast mit allen, die den Schweizer Immobilien- und Finanzierungsmarkt im Blick behalten wollen. Bis zur nächsten Folge. Dieser Podcast wird von Resolve SA produziert und dient ausschließlich Informationszwecken. Die Inhalte stellen keine Finanz-, Anlage- oder Rechtsberatung dar und ersetzen keine individuelle Beratung durch Fachpersonen.